2020 meeting of the Board of Land and Natural Resources. We are having our meeting by Zoom with the board members and applicants present. And we are live streaming this so that the public can watch the board meeting. We have taken written testimony in advance of the meeting. So thank you all for being here. Dr. Gahn, would you like to read our standard contested case statement?
I'll be happy to, Chair. In some of the matters before the board, a person may wish to request a contested case hearing. If such a request is made before the board's decision, then the board will consider the request first before considering the merits of the item before it. A person who wants a contested case may also wait until the board decides the issue, then request a contested case after the decision. It's up to you. Any request must be made in writing within 10 days. And if no request for contested case is made, the board will make a decision. The department will treat the decision as final and proceed accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, next up we have some minutes. I'm not freezing here. Okay, first the minutes for the meeting of February 28, 2020. Board members, any comments to add to the draft minutes? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes for February 28, 2020?
So moved.
Second.
On favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, I'm going to say after each vote that it's unanimous unless it's not, in which case we will name the votes. Okay, next up is the minutes of March 13, 2020. Board members, any comments to the draft minutes? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the March 13 minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All right, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 That's a unanimous vote. Okay, next.
Just for the record, on the February 28th minutes, there was a notation as to whether I had recused myself from the matter regarding the Kauai, and it should note that I did recuse myself. Darlene had a note.
Right.
And also for the record, on the minutes for February 28th, I was not present at the meeting.
Thank you.
Okay, and so I will note that he did not vote on the February 28 minutes.
That's correct. I did not vote.
So it's not unanimous. Okay, thank you very much. All right, next we're going to go to the M items, Department of Transportation.
Okay. Can't hear you.
There we go. Yeah. Aloha, Chair Case, board members, Ross Smith for the Department of Transportation Airports Division for items M1 through 5. Let me just go ahead and do this. In M1, DOT seeks approval to issue a grant of non-exclusive easement for underground power line facilities and a tractor power substation to Hawaiian Electric Company Incorporated. Underground lines cover approximately 4,253 square feet, and the traction power substation covers approximately 38,268 square feet. There will be no charges for either of those. Items M2 through 3 are at Kalaeloa Airport. M2 and 3 are for issuance of revocable to Helicopter Transport Services LLC for ramp space for a container to store equipment and parking for a heavy lift helicopter. The monthly rent in M2 will be for the 200 square feet occupied by the container. It's $208.33 per month. In M3, the monthly rent for approximately 4,650 square feet of aircraft parking is $324. An M4 DOTA 6 approval to issue a revocable permit for a parking for two aircraft at Kalaeloa Airport. Monthly rental for the two 849 square feet aircraft tie downs is $108. And an M5, the DOT seeks approval to issue a revocable permit for aircraft parking to Barbers Point Flight School LLC. Monthly rental for approximately 849 square feet is $54. And any questions you may have, I'll try to answer.
Sorry. So, board members, do you have any questions about any of those M items outlined by DOT? Okay, hearing none. Somebody want to make a motion to approve M 1 through 5?
So moved.
Okay, is there a second? All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. That's unanimous.
Thank you.
All right.
Board members.
Thank you very much, Ross. Glad it worked out on the video. All right. Next, we're going to go to the C items. Okay, let's just go in order. So first is C1, and I see Dave Smith is here to present the forestry and wildlife items. So C1.
Hey, good morning. Okay, C1. Can you hear me, I assume?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So C1 is a request to enter into a memorandum of understanding between the State of Hawaii, Department of Land and Natural Resources, and the Marine Corps Base Hawaii for staging helicopter operations. So the idea is that we can utilize their airfield and facilities out there to stage. It's a good place to stage for offshore island work, Mokomanu, Kapapa. They have a specific project in mind for Kapapa. In the past, we've staged out of Kauainui base yard area, which is a nice open area for our purposes. It works, but then if we're sling loading, it's further from the islands, and we also have to sling load over residential areas. So the marine base is a superior spot for staging out of. So the idea or the recommendation is that we delegate authority to the chairman to negotiate and sign a MOU between DLNR and Marine Corps Base Hawaii so that we can utilize their facilities for helicopter operations.
Thank you. Could I ask everyone who's just joined to please mute your phones and also to mute your video until your item is up? Thank you. Okay, board members, do you have any questions about C1 as submitted?
No, I think it's a great arrangement. That makes a lot of sense to do it out at KM Kaneohe.
Great. Okay. Any other questions or comments? If not, is there a motion to approve C1 as submitted?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. That's unanimous. Okay. Next, we'll go to C2. Dave, you want to do C2?
Before you start, I need to recuse myself from C2 since it involves the Nature Conservancy of Hawaii.
Okay. And then I was going to let Emma Ewan present on this particular item.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Okay. Great. This is a continuation of a long-range management plan. The NAP program, National Area Partnership Program, has these long-term easements that provide conservation management in perpetuity, and the state matches funding from the private entity, in this case the Nature Conservancy, to manage an area that has ecosystem intactness that rivals the natural area reserve system with the state, and so, well, not rivals, but is in the same amount of quality as the state. So these are really important native ecosystems that are on private land. So we want to keep them protected. And this one in particular is for Waikamoi Preserve on East Maui. And so it's a addition to the former Waikamoi Preserve, and it's actually the largest preserve in the entire state, or largest private preserve in the state.
Okay, questions, board members? So I should say that actually I worked on an early version of the East Maui Irrigation Addition to Waikamoi many, many years ago. So I should just say that, but I have no particular conflict in this. Okay, any questions? Sorry, Jimmy, you're on mute, Jimmy.
I have a question.
Yeah. Okay.
How do we handle public testimony? You know, when we go to vote, like a motion right now, but before we make a motion, is there any public testimony? How is that being handled?
So we're doing written public testimony, and Jimmy, you stopped your video, so you might want to turn your video back on. So we are doing written testimony. I don't know that we received written testimony on this item.
Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah, we're not doing live public testimony in these Zoom meetings. What we're trying to do is, to the best of our abilities, if we think there's a lot of people that want to testify publicly, we're trying to hold off on those items as much as possible. And otherwise we are taking written testimony in advance of the meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions, comments on this? If not, is there a motion to approve C2 as submitted?
So move.
Second.
Okay. Second.
Okay, thank you. All in favor? Aye.
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 Okay, that is unanimous. I think I said aye. Aye. Except for Sam Gunn, who recused. All right, we're going to go to item C3 now. Now, C3. Let me just pull it up here. Dave presented, but it's got a number of sub items on it, 1 through 10. But we first need to note that a request for a contested case was received on this item. So you all should have gotten testimony regarding this request for contested case. And so let me know if you don't have that and I can route it, but you should have gotten it, I think, yesterday. And so, I guess I'm going to ask Cindy Young, our AG, to provide any guidance on this contested case request.
Good morning, Chair and members. We reviewed the contested case request, and there is no property interest, so. The board can deny a contested case if it would like to.
Okay, thank you. Board members, any comments about the comments or questions about the contested case request? Somebody who is on did not. Marlene, can you mute? Can you mute the person who's on the line but not muted? Yeah, thank you. Okay, questions, comments about this contested case request?
I don't have any questions with the contested case. I have questions on the matter itself, so I don't know when we can talk about that.
Okay, well, we will deal with the questions on the matter itself when we get to it, but we first need to address this request for a contested case. So okay. I think if I have no questions or comments about the request for contested case, I would like to know if there's a motion to deny the request for contested case.
I'll make a motion based upon the advice of the Attorney General's office that we proceed and deny the request for a contested case.
Okay, is there a second on that?
Second.
Okay, discussion on this item.
I agree with the Attorney General that because there's no property interest in this, that we have the grounds to deny the request.
Okay, any other questions, comments? If not, all in favor of the motion to deny the request for contested case, say aye.
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 Okay, that's unanimous as far as I can tell. Thank you. All right, now we will go. Dave, can you present items C1 through 10?
Sure. Okay, so the subject is approval of grant awards from available funds in Land Conservation Fund as requested in applications. There was a number of projects that were approved. There's only funding for the top one and partial two at this point. But we usually approve them all in case things fall through, then we have the flexibility later to move down the list and fund other items. I just want to note, and I'm going to let Dave Penn take over in just a minute. I just wanted to do a quick intro, but I wanted to note that due to the fiscal situation, we're not really sure how this is going to play out. We have restrictions on contracts at this point, but I thought it was worthwhile to go ahead and get board approval on these projects, at least in concept, so we have that hurdle taken care of. We have other fiscal hurdles going forward in terms of being able to actually expend these funds, but I think they're definitely worthwhile projects. I think it's worth at least the board forwarding, so then we can start working with BNF and the governor's office to see that if we can get the project get the funding allocated. So the recommendations are that we enter into the agreements, that we approve contingency awards, and delegate authority to the chairperson, etc., as per the submittal. And now I'm going to hand it over to David Penn, who is our program manager for the Land Legacy Program, and let him do a presentation.
Good morning, Chair and board members. This is David Penn, program specialist for Legacy Land Conservation. Thank you for joining me up here at the Northern Lights. we'd like to focus the presentation on the discussion on those top two ranked projects, which we hope to have funding available for. Number one being the Kauna Mano project in Kau, Hawaii, and number two being Mapulehu on Molokai. Like to note that we do have the applicants' representatives here with us, as well as their partners, and also two members of the Legacy Land Conservation Commission who were lead participants in our very extensive review process that led to this recommendation, in case there are any questions on that aspect. For number one, the Kauna Mano, I would like to note for the record, at my count, we have received 20 written testimonies for this item, 10 that are against, 9 that are in favor, and 1 that appears to be neutral on the issue. Also like to note that for Kauna Mano, this project goes back quite a long ways, beginning as early as 2012 before the Hawaii County Public Open Space Commission, and went through their recommendation process and secured a resolution from the county council for the director of finance to negotiate for county funding on the project. And so There have been public meetings at the county and public meetings at the Legacy Land Conservation Commission with many opportunities to address all of these issues that you've seen in the testimony. And for Mapulehu, also came out a very close second. And we think these are both terrific projects. We think that they provide for public fund investment in the private sector that will help to promote economic resilience, job security, provide more jobs in the future. Both of these applications would become available for management grants that could be available through the Legacy Land Conservation Program, as well as for Kaunamano could become eligible for a management grant from the County of Hawaii. And the way County of Hawaii has been running those grants up until now is it's a request for proposals to other nonprofit organizations to implement various components of the management plan that the County of Hawaii requires its grantees to produce. So that's a brief overview of where we're at. If there's any questions at this point or any other areas of the submittal that you'd like us to focus on, we'd be happy to do that.
Thank you, David. Okay, board members, do you have any questions of David before we hear from the applicants themselves?
I would like to hear from the applicants before I ask David a question.
Okay. All right.
Just a couple of general questions.
Yeah.
For Dave. The first thing is actually really excellent photos and maps in this submittal. I wanted to say that the submittal was extremely well illustrated. I had a couple of general questions. First, this only is a fiscal year 2020 decision, right? And fiscal year, if things work out and there's money to be spent in 2021, this comes back to the board again with and can you explain how the process would be as far as ranking of some of these? Would still be on the list, but would the ranking necessarily be the same?
Yes, thank you, Chris. The ranking would not be the same. We had a very unique year this year in which we shifted our application schedule to be ahead of the budget request curve. So when we had our last application cycle and our meeting in September 2019 on Maui, we actually reviewed applications for fiscal year 2020 and for fiscal year 2021. So we already have recommendation from the commission for fiscal year 2021. As soon as the next legislative session opens, we will go to the Senate President and the Speaker of the House to consult on those recommendations as is required by statute. And then after that, we would bring it back to the board in a submittal that's similar to the one we have today for fiscal year 2020. But the rankings are not the same and some of the projects are different.
Well, I'd just like to comment. I think that Nawaiʻeha is a tremendous opportunity for the state, and I hope one way or another we can make that happen. It's lower down on the list today, and I'm not, there's some things that need to be put together for that. It's not ready. It's, you know, there's a lot of other funding that would be necessary, so I'm not making a pitch for it right now, but that's just putting that out there.
Yeah, Chris, this is David Smith. This is Nawaiʻeha is one of our highest priorities for the division, and we're working on that on a number of different angles. It did make the cut on this one from the commission recommendations for various reasons, but we certainly are working very hard on Nawaiʻeha.
Okay, that's all I have right now. And I would like to hear. Oh. Can I make one like technical point here? You talk about this is on chapter 343. You talk there's a lot of discussion about exemptions. My reading of 343-5 is that acquisition of unimproved real property is simply not a trigger. We don't have to go to exemptions. You might want to, I'm just mentioning that, you might want to look at this next time. And most of these, I think, are unimproved, class would be classified as unimproved real property.
I agree with you on the meaning of 343, Chris. The problem we have is that unimproved is not defined anywhere. And so in an abundance of caution, we take a very narrow view of what is improved versus unimproved. Being as we've already been sued once on the 343 exemption for one of these previous projects.
Okay.
David, I have a question. You mentioned about the Legacy Land Commission making recommendations for both FY 20 and 21. But we don't actually approve anything in different fiscal years, right? So what you're saying is this is the transition year where you're trying to get ahead of the process, trying to move to a different timing in the approval process. And so this is that what was going on in the transition year, but the board itself FY 21 projects in FY 21.
Correct. That was one time only. And actually we are in the process right now of putting out the applications for fiscal year 2022. Okay. Based on an assumption of continued base funding or less, depending on how things develop.
Okay, any other questions of David?
Chris? I have one I forgot. Can you explain how the current state limitation on contracts affects the program, the Legacy Land Program?
I cannot. Really don't know what's going on.
Dave mentioned.
There's a lot of budget review going on right now, so we don't know, you know, kind of what the next step will be. And that's why DOFAR wanted to go ahead and move these forward at this level, but again, you know, where they go from here, we don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's go to the applicants. So for C1, I know there's a number of people that are in the Zoom meeting right now. Can you turn on your video and raise your hand if you want to talk about C1? Okay. So I see two people that raised their hand here, Ms. Hayashi, Mr. Fox. Who wants to go first? Okay.
Please. Yeah.
Go ahead.
You hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Aloha, Chair Case and members of the board. My name is Keone Fox. I am a Native Hawaiian cultural practitioner, as well as a lineal descendant of the lands at Kauna Manoa and Manaka'a Kawala in the Moku of Kau. I am also a volunteer board member of the Alaka Hakai Trail Association. I submitted written testimony on behalf of Alaka Hakai in support of agenda item C3. I'm also available today to address any questions or concerns regarding the two Alaka Hakai applications listed as items C3A and C3D. I would like to acknowledge and validate concerns regarding the future management of these properties and public access. I think these comments underline the Kau community's unwavering commitment to protecting our coastline, especially our heritage lands and wahi kupuna. I could feel the sincerity and passion in those statements. Since ancient times, Kau has endured a multitude of hardships. The heart and soul of the community is rooted in our aina. These lands have nourished our families for generations. Because of the significance of these lands and its impact on our future, I can understand that those sentiments include some doubt and trepidation. In the state's legacy application form, Section H asks the applicant to describe the proposed future uses of the property to be acquired. Please allow me to read that section from our Kauna Manoa application. Ala Kahakai is committed to community-based stewardship. The property will be managed in collaboration with descendants and Kau community volunteers. We hope to partner with other organizations who are active in the area and knowledgeable with stewardship of Kau resources, such as the Hawaii Wildlife Fund, Ka'ohana Ohonoapo, and NPS Ala Kahakai National Historic Trail. Ala Kahakai will engage with stakeholders to develop a resource management plan for the property within 12 to 18 months after taking ownership. The plan will be based on Ala Kahakai's resource management values, which can be further refined with additional input from descendants and the community. I'd like to add that the management plan for the properties will also include a plan for public access. Now with Waikapuna, Ala Kahakai completed that purchase only 4 months ago, and during this time, we have accommodated all access requests while the management planning process is pending. In addition to preserving the cultural sites and natural resources, Ala Kahakai will allow for continued ranching in support of our local agriculture economy and island food security. As I stated in my written testimony, my family has a deep ancestral connection to Kauna Manoa and Kalala. For my ohana, the threat of development is very real. For years, we have been advocating for the protection and preservation of our family's iwi kupuna while subdivision applications were being reviewed by the planning department. I alone was the only recognized descendant by the Hawaii Island Burial Council for Kalala, and it was a heavy kuleana. I had multiple meetings with the Burial Council, planning staff, and other organizations, including OHA, who supported our efforts. I recall many, many sleepless nights. We have remained steadfast over the last 20 years, desperately searching and praying for a lifeline. And here we are today, humbly asking for your support. Mahalo for your consideration.
Thank you. Okay, board members, any questions?
I thank you so much for that testimony. I thought it was very well said. And you are looking out for the descendants as well as and the people of that community. So again, I thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Other questions, board members?
I have some questions. Okay. I'd like to ask several questions. The ownership of the land will go into what organization? Secondly, can you tell me a little bit about your association, 501c3, and you know who the members are? The third thing is that the revenues that are collected from the ranch for the cattle, how much is involved and where will those funds go? Will it go to your organization or to another organization?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the first question, please?
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about your association? What is it? I know it's a 501c3. Are there multiple members or is it just a tight, close-knit group? And
I think his first question was, who's going to own this?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Who's going to take title to this?
Let me start there. So the fee simple owner will be the Ala Kahakai Trail Association, the nonprofit. And the County of Hawaii will hold a conservation easement over the property, which will put further restrictions on what the future uses can be. The Ala Kahakai Trail Association is a local nonprofit. We're based in Kamuela. We currently have 6 board members, and we are all volunteers, and we all represent different geographic areas of the island. I'm the only one who is from Kau. I'm actually the most recent board member. For many years, the association did not have a Kau representative. Although we have a significant portion of the Ala Kahakai, which runs through our district. We do work in partnership with the National Park Service. In the year 2000, Congress actually established the Ala Kahakai National Historic Trail as part of the national trail system. And you may hear about their counterparts on the mainland, like the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and so forth. We have one of the oldest trails because our trail was actually created by our kupuna. And we, as descendants, are committed to making sure that that trail is managed in a culturally appropriate way. What we try to do is engage the community so that the trail can be managed, can be a community managed trail. So we're there to provide support and guidance. And what we're trying to do is allow the Park Service to be better connected to community. To purchase lands is really our last resort. You know, what we really want to do is partner with different stakeholders and landowners who have the trail, you know, running through their lands, running through their communities, so that they are aware of it, so that they have knowledge, and so that they protect the trail and all of its surrounding cultural and natural resources on their own. That really is our preference. In some other situations, as most recently with the Malco part of Kavala, we were able to enter into a conservation easement to protect those resources. And that's another option as well. We still achieve the same goals and we're able to protect all the resources, but the landowner maintains all the liabilities, the risks, and the costs, because there's insurance costs and property taxes as well that are involved. I'm the only board member that is from Kau, and my journey to protect our cultural and natural resources started many, many years ago when I was very young. I only joined the board in 2016, and the board recognized this passion that I had for protecting our Iwi Kupuna. You know, I was really surprised that they asked me to join the board, because I never really thought about the trail. You know, for my family, it's always been about protecting our burial sites. And it wasn't until later that I realized that, you know, that was our, that was the tie that connects our entire island, all of the Ahupua'a, all of the villages, Mauka to Makai. It's that trail that binds us and supported our government, our people, our Lahui. Can you repeat your third question?
Just a couple of items more to follow up. The revenues from the ranch rental, where does that go to? And then the other aspect is your association. Is it just the six members of the board who are members of the association, or are there other members as well?
Okay, good question. Let me start with the membership. So right now we only have six board members. We are looking to increase our capacity. We'll definitely, if you have recommendations, let me know. This is a big kuleana to protect our trail that goes around our entire island. Our goal is to engage community for community-based management and community stewardship. What we will do with these properties is create a committee of community to manage and make the decisions for those properties and those resources going forward. So that's what we've done with our Waikapuna property, which was our most recent acquisition. We now have eight members from the community that are going to be making decisions for that property going forward. And we will do the same with the revenues. I'm not sure how much the past release revenue is, and my colleague Reina Hayashi from the Trust for Public Land can answer that question. But we did in our application ask the state if we can retain the revenues from the past releases and use that towards the direct management and stewardship of the property.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of Mr. Fox? Chris?
I had a telephone meeting with Mr. Fox and Leah Hong day before yesterday, I think. And we went through some of this material, but just for the sake of the board members, I'd like to ask some of the same questions and maybe a few new ones. Can you talk about what you anticipate for public access through Kaunamanaʻo, and talk about how public access is handled at Waikapuna currently?
Sure. So for Kaunamanaʻo, right now most of the public access is for fishing. There are two ranch roads that lead down to the coastline. They are gated because the property is ranched, so there are gates to keep the cattle in. It's right along the highway. That's really important for the ranch. But the ranch allows people to request the key for access. They do allow for pedestrian access, which is typically from the highway. In the long term, what we would like to do is be able to accommodate use of the trail. There's 3 miles of the trail that runs through the property, as well as the old Plantation Railroad. What we really like to do is facilitate use of that trail, not just through Kaunamanoa, but to continue all the way through to Waikapuna. And that will require a lot of engagement with the community to make sure that the trail and its use is done in an appropriate way. We're not thinking about, making this any kind of attraction for visitors. What we really want to do is make it available for use by the community, especially for people who want to use the property for subsistence fishing and gathering. So our commitment is to facilitate public access. Over the years, a lot of these properties that were purchased, access was prohibited. So it's a very sensitive issue. The plantation held these keys and was almost used as a way to manipulate and control the community. And there's a lot of sore feelings because of that. So I can understand where that comes from. We will.
And specifically, go ahead.
Sorry. And as far as, a long-term plan for access, what we want to do is hear from the community before we make those decisions. And that will be incorporated into this long-term management plan. I forgot
your name. For Kaunamanoa, would you be able to implement a vehicular Maukamakai access on a keyed permission basis?
Yes. And that's what that's what was already being done with what the Waikapuna property. I'm sorry, I know you asked about that. So Waikapuna is another property which is leased to 2 different ranchers. There's about 4 gates that you need to cross through. And right now, people put in the request for access. And what we've been doing is coordinating the pickup and drop off of the keys with the rancher.
With the rancher. You dropped out at the very end there. You coordinated with the rancher.
Huahivi Ranch, correct.
Yes, and the same ranch is involved in Kaunamanoa.
That's correct, yes.
And so you would be able to, there's a physical ability to have a relatively convenient e-pickup and drop-off for people who want to drive to some spot near the coast.
That's correct. And Kuo'ivi Ranch in Na'alehu, their office is right across the street from Kaunamanoa. It's in Kaunamanoa, actually.
All right. I did a lot of work on public access when I was planning director in Kaunamanoa. My impression of the access is that there was no Maukamakai, actually recognized Maukamakai public access in this general area. And, the access to the shoreline between Honuapo and Kalawalu was controlled by private landowners, typically the plantation. Before then, the plantation went out. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. You don't know of any recognized historical trail or road that has been used without permission, without specific permission by the public through Kaunamanoa, do you? There's nothing like
that. I don't. Right now, we haven't done enough research to find out if there, I'm sure there were Maukamakai trails. We haven't done enough research to identify them all. But the railroad was created before 1892. I'm sure you're familiar with the Highways Act of 1892. So we consider that something that could be used by the public. It does go get down to the shoreline. It doesn't go exactly where everybody would probably want to go. And it kind of cuts through the property laterally. So that's something that the public could use for pedestrian access. It wouldn't be able to accommodate vehicles. But if you're talking about vehicular access, the public would probably have to use one of these 2 ranch roads that I was referring to.
Did the archaeological inventory survey for Kanamano identify any Malcolm-Mackay trails?
Not to my knowledge. It did for the Kavala property, though. Let me point that out. Kavala does have two trails that go from Na'alehu. One goes down to Waikapuna, and the other one goes down to Manakaʻa, to the cliffs. And there is an access route down to the bottom of the shoreline. And to my knowledge, that's the only way to get down from the cliff. And, you know, in our conservation easement with Kuʻalivi Ranch for the Malko part of Kavala, we have asked for the rights to work with them to allow for eventually community use of that trail with their support. Of course, they're concerned about their cattle, security, making sure gates are locked and so forth. So those are other issues that we would work with them. But that is part of our long-term goal to facilitate that type of access.
You know, one thing that I mentioned in our discussion was that the Alakaʻakai trail concept is a magnificent concept, but if you look at what segments of trail are actually open, there's few, if any, that were not already part of the Na'alehele State Program or public access is required by zoning regulations or areas within the national park that the national park opened. To me, a trail, I'm hearing a lot about protecting a trail, and it's important to protect aspects of archaeology of the trail, but a trail is something that people walk on, and I'm not seeing a lot of results as far as creating a trail that people get to walk on.
That's a valid concern. Like I said, I'm a recent board member for our association. I just joined in 2016, and my experience is with Kaʻu. But our nonprofit board is really more responsible with tying in the community. The National Park Service has the jurisdiction over the trail itself. You know, they're the ones that are actually working together to connect all the pieces. You know, trying to work with different landowners. And I'll be honest with you, their focus has been in South Kohala and North Kona. I'm from Kaʻu, so I'm not happy with that. I want to protect the trails in Kaʻu. That's where my family is from, and that's where we have those connections. But I do support my colleagues in all of the efforts for them to protect their aina and their trail.
Well, is it part of your long-term goal to see a walkable coastal trail through what have been purchased with public money, for the most part, the lands between Honuapo and Kaluwalu.
Correct.
Are either been purchased with public money or are being proposed?
You're absolutely right, Chris. That's what our long-term goal is. I just want to call out that there are a lot of sensitive places, a lot of sensitive sites, you know, along that trail. It's really important for us to work with the community and the descendants so that we make sure those areas are protected so that they don't get damaged by maybe visitor use or overuse. You know, our ancestors were very, very respectful. I'm gonna give you an example. In Kona Mano, there's a village down at the shoreline called Paʻula. And I used to go down there and play as a kid when we'd stay with my great grandparents. And there were Kwanane boards all over the place. Some were carved into the pōhoihoi, and some were just portable. You know, they were just on the ground. And now I can't find any of those Kwanane boards. They're all gone. If you look in some of the caves, you can still see buckets and shovels that people left because they've looted all of the artifacts and the fish hooks. Part of the road goes right over the foot trail, right over a part of the trail that goes up to the chief's house. So it's very pristine. And that is the hard part, is finding this balance. And that's why we really need to work with the community, the descendants, the stakeholders, the people that have that ancestral and historical knowledge to make sure that by opening this up to the public, we don't lose what's important to us. And I think that that is the biggest challenge that every land manager faces.
Well, it's a challenge, but I hope that the balance is not struck in a way that excludes the public, because that can be the result. And the state does this, goes overboard with this sometimes too, in my view. People are going to misbehave, but they'll find a way to do it. The loss of the Konani boards that you talk about occurred during a period of private ownership with limited and restricted public access. So I think even with this virus, there's this sense that grows of keep people out, or keep other people, keep the outsiders out and keep them away. And I feel we're losing a sense of trust and welcoming that we need to have among people. And I feel that the basic thrust of the environmental movement and the desire to protect and love the earth comes from being able to get out and enjoy it. And, these are the costs of locking things up. So that's my little lecture for the day. And I think it's a great project. I wanted to us to go ahead with it. I'm going to talk to our staff a little bit about how we ensure that public access is implemented on these properties, what kind of oversight the DLNR and BLNR can have to make sure that after all this community interaction, that there is some reasonable way for people to get to the ocean and people to go through these properties along the ocean.
Thank you.
Jimmy.
Mr. Fox, you said there was, besides Kuivi, who is the other ranch? That was one question I have. And the other question is, you talked about if we had any suggestions for board members to be on your board over there. How about the people that were against or opposed, you know, and some of them have some lineal descendants to the area? How about getting them involved so you can get their manawa?
That's a great suggestion, Mr. Gomes. I was actually very moved by some of those statements and just wished I had had an opportunity to do more engagement with them, because I think they could be actually our biggest allies. That's the kind of people we actually really need involved in this process and the stewardship. And I'm looking forward to that opportunity, and I welcome them. If they are listening today, please feel free to reach out to me. I will make every effort to meet with you to get your monopoly and hopefully engage you in the long-term management of this property. As far as the ranchers, for Kanamano, the only pasture lease is with Kuaivi Ranch, but with Waikapuna, the property that we most recently acquired, Kuaivi Ranch leases the Makai portion, and Mr. Wally Andrade is the lessee for the Malka portion.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? And no further questions. Ms. Hayashi, did you want to add anything?
No, I don't have anything to add. I'm here for any other questions.
Okay, is there anybody else wanted to say anything about C1? Or any further questions about C1?
Yes, I have, just for Dave, but either of the Daves.
Chris, and then KV. And then I think Sam was looking like he wanted to say something. Okay, go ahead, Chris.
I'm not sure of the process. If the state makes a grant award to Alakahakai Association for Kaunamano, I'm looking for some point of oversight where the DLNR can make sure that there is reasonable public access on a managed basis, both Malcolm Mackay and laterally on this property. Is there some point that we can, where we look at what's happening with the project and we can make sure that that happens?
Hi, Chris. David Penn with Legacy Land Conservation Program.
Yeah, there's actually several check-in points along the way, both pre-acquisition and post-acquisition. After board approval of this grant award, the next step is to go through Department of Budget and Finance and the governor to release the funding for the land acquisition. And after that, we begin a contracting process with, in this case, Alakahakai Trail Association. And there are many due diligence steps along the way, including, I think, one of the most important is the resource land valuation documentation form. And we've been through an extensive exercise with Alakahakai on this for the Waikapuna property already, and also for another project which predates this with Alakahakai Trail Association in Kohala at Kaiholena. And so on both sides, we're quite aware of what the process is. It can be somewhat tedious, and it's meant to be very tedious from the state's perspective in terms of understanding what all the resources are that are intended to be protected under this arrangement. Also, the County of Hawaii will be involved as the holder of the conservation easement with its own rights to inspect and enforcement mechanisms for the terms of the conservation easement. Under the Legacy Land Statute 173A, it is required that the property be managed for the purpose for which the grant was awarded in perpetuity. And the purpose for which the grant is awarded is basically, in our view, everything that happened during the application process, the review process, the commission meetings, the board meetings, the resource value documentation form, you know, everything that we have that tells us what the property is about and what is the purpose of the management. So in this case, I think Keone has expressed both the goals and objectives of the association in managing this property. We require the applicant to submit a self-report form. There's no set time frame, but generally we look for something. The first one is due 2 years after the closing. And then we also have the ability to go on a compliance and enforcement site visit to go through the property and inspect all the management and to assure that the purpose of the grant is being met and that the resources are not being harmed. And then the relief on that under our administrative rules is basically we could always do a suit for damages, or we could also enjoin the awardee from participating in any future state grant programs. I think those are the two basic elements of the relief that it's available. So we're getting upwards close to 40 properties now that have been concerned through the Legacy Land Conservation Program. And so it is time for us to start paying more attention to our monitoring and compliance responsibilities. We're stretched a little bit thin on all fronts, but we have monitored 5 of those properties so far and plan to do maybe 5 or 6 a year from here going forward.
Well, there's a contract between the state and the awardee, right?
Yes.
The grant itself is in the form of a contract.
The grant agreement is a contract, and the application is incorporated as an exhibit into that contract. And the contract basically requires the deed to parrot the language of the statute in terms of protecting the property for the purpose for which the grant was awarded. For instance, Mr. Char asked about the revenue from the pasture licenses. So because these licenses predate board approval, they don't necessarily kick in the revenue sharing requirement under our statute. But let's say one of the licenses expired and was going to be reissued under different terms from the current terms. In that case, we would expect that the landowner would come back to the board for approval of this new disposition of it, of interest, and to address the revenue sharing requirement, which is basically based on the percentage of the amount of funds that the state put into the acquisition. The state is supposed to get back from revenue from the license agreement.
So we could put in a clause, if the board required it, in the contract that required Malcolm Mackay and Lateral Public Access on a managed basis without necessarily having all the details worked out at that time. And then that would be a contractual obligation between the awardee and the state of Hawaii, correct?
I was wondering if that question was going to come up, Chris. Yes, we've also go over this with the commission. When the commission formulates its recommendation, the commission is free to recommend whatever it wants, and also the board is free to attach whatever conditions it wants to the grant agreement, I believe.
It may be in there already, but I'm not really sure that what I'm talking about here is explicit in what's been in the grant application. So that's my feeling right now, is that we should say something general like that. The details can be worked out later. And then would any, if they do a new lease, you're saying that the existing contract with the ranchers are licenses, but if they did a long-term lease with a rancher, does that need board approval?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So then the state could also have some oversight over to make sure leases do not unduly restrict public access.
Yeah, I think in that situation, I think it's basically just the board approves or disapproves. I'm not sure what that negotiation over the conditions would look like. We haven't come up against that yet.
Why would it come back to the board since it will be in private ownership? I mean, I think a new lease would have to be consistent with the terms of the grant, but it's
The statute and the grant agreement require written approval from the board for a disposition.
Okay.
And we've brought a couple of those to the board previously. One was for the National Tropical Botanical Garden in Hanamaui, and the other was for the Uchida Coffee Farm in Kona with the Kona Historical Society.
Kaivi, you had a question.
I think my question was answered. Thank you, David, for covering that for the board. I was going to mention some of that, having sat where you sat on Legacy Land once upon a time. But I just wanted to make note that, you know, some of these conditions, Chris, you know, the Legacy Land, you know, they ask a lot of questions of the applicants, and a lot of these issues are fleshed out. And I know I can't remember, but I don't think we made a management plan part of that. Is that true, David? Is that still true that the applicant doesn't have to have some kind of management plan?
You know, a management plan is not required unless you want to qualify for management grant funds.
Okay.
In many cases, if there's a co-sponsor such as the county or a federal agency, they're going to require a management plan. And if the applicant says yes in the application to us, yes, we're going to do a management plan, then we're going to be looking for that management plan. Otherwise, that's why we've been putting a lot of focus on this resource value documentation form, because it's the only other thing that we would really have to go on as a comprehensive expression of what's happening on the property.
Okay, thank you.
Sam, did you have a question? Yeah.
So Dave, yeah. My understanding is that we're authorizing $3.5 million for this round, and that if I look at the numbers right, that means that A and B would be up for funding, and that the other The others that are on the list are there as contingencies in case there are problems with those and we need to move on to the next priorities. Is that correct?
That's mostly correct, Sam. Thank you. This is David Penn, Legacy Land Conservation Program. The Kaunamano would be fully funded at $2.4 million. During the Legacy Land Commission meetings and the application, during the wrap-up, we did come up with some budget calculations that indicated there would probably be only about $800,000 plus available out of our remaining budget for Mapulehu. We're still working on those numbers, but it does look to be in that range.
And I noticed that there are folks from Molokai that are in line to testify. So are we going to entertain that testimony before we move on to this, Suzanne?
Yeah, we're going to run through all of them before we do a final vote. Okay, any other awesome. Questions on C1? I mean, the first one. Okay, let's actually go on then to the Mapulehu one is the next one, I believe.
Molokai Land Trust.
Yeah. Dave, you want to introduce that one?
Sure, I have my my sheet here. This was the second highest ranked application for over 1,800 acres at Mapulehu on the Kona side of Molokai. Molokai Land Trust is already experienced with the Legacy Land Conservation Program. It had one of the very early land acquisitions on Molokai and continues to manage that property. I should note that the current chair of the Legacy Land Conservation Commission is Butch Haas, who is also the executive director of Molokai Land Trust. He had to recuse himself from all of the proceedings having to do with this application, so that's why you don't see him up here today based on his position. But this is agricultural land with some land in the conservation district. Matching funds have been secured in part from the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service. And also looks like Maui County is looking favorably upon putting in some additional matching funds for now. Also, we feel very strongly that this is a great possibility for job creation, for food security and agricultural production. Molokai Land Trust was experienced in getting money from RRA stimulus packages in the past, and also is experienced with the New Markets Tax Credits Program, through which it was able to obtain millions of dollars to build its new community base yard and facility in it's not in Kauna Kakai. Anyway, so very strong organization, great potential for this acquisition. There were some title issues that came up during the review. There are a few Kuleana interests in holdings within the larger property, and the outcome of that was that Molokai Land Trust intends to work with all of these other owners to become part of the project, but not necessarily to include those lands as part of the acquisition. And the others can probably explain that better than I can.
Okay, before we get to the others, anybody have any questions of David on this one? Let's go ahead and go to
Yeah, I have a question. You know, this is a terrific piece of property and a terrific opportunity. The Wailau Trail goes through here. And I don't know, I suspect, last time I was on the Wailau Trail was from the bottom and couldn't make it to the Pali. And I suspect the Pali is wiped out, but I don't know for sure. Is there any doubt that the Wailau Trail is a public trail under the jurisdiction of the state?
Uh,
Daviana McGregor, I have to keep my video off because I have a very weak internet connection here. But the White Owl Trail Estate is owned by the state, and right now access to it is somewhat compromised because of the overgrowth on the property. And it would be our intention and plan to work with the community to clear it so that the White Owl Trail access will be available to the public.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that, because it's one of the great hiking experiences in Hawaii. I haven't been, the one and only time I was on the Wailau Trail on the Mapulehu side was in 1976. I've been on the Wailau Valley side a few times, but I am very glad to hear that. That's my major question on this project. I think it's like Kaunamana, a great project.
I'll point out that I've been on that trail a number of times myself, from both from the south side and from the north side. The last time I went up the Pali of Kekumu was, over 20 years ago, but it was a wonderful experience even then. So it would be awesome. I agree with you, Chris, to reactivate that trail.
Okay, let's go ahead and hear from any of the, raise your hand if you're part of the applicant. Mr. Alihi and Ms. Hayashi, go ahead.
Doctor. And myself, as I said, I can't project because of weak link. But
okay, we'll consider your hand raised.
Well, so if possible, I'd like to lead off. I'm the representative of the Molokai Land Trust because our chair, our executive director, has recused himself. I'm a member of the board and the chair of the Lands and Stewardship Committee for the Land Trust. And we do have an extraordinary opportunity. We had been in and there is a sense of urgency for this. We have been in discussion with the Meyer Friel heirs who owned the property for 3 years, and we were hoping that they would agree to work with us and be patient to wait for us to get the funding necessary to acquire the property, but they went ahead without nevertheless, and they have put the land up for sale on the open market for $3,999,999. Heard that, but that the sense of urgency and the testimonies we submitted speak to the extraordinary values. I'll let Emmett speak to that.
So, hello, board members. No, Emmett Aluli. I just wanted to kind of stand by my testimony, which was submitted yesterday. I think we made the deadline. Just a little more background. I've been in family practice, private practice on Molokai for 44 years now. I'm also a medical executive director of Molokai General Hospital. I think most of you know my work for Lahaina, beginning with the occupation of Koho'olawe and establishment of the Koho'olawe Island Reserve Commission and all the work that went in between that, including declaring Koho'olawe as a on the National Historic Landmark as a island, a district. Same kind of work continued in Kipahulu and Honokahua, and then kind of like on Molokai, Manai, where Ili'ili Opai is, and Kalai, where we were able to kind of like get an intensive environmental impact archaeological survey, Kaiaka on the west end, and even Kalapapa. Big Island was really important, and I've learned an awful lot. And part of my involvement, most of my involvement, is because I've taken care of Pearl Meyer Friel Petro in her ever since I came here, and also take care of children, one son and one daughter, and now their grandchildren, their great grandchildren. And there's a legacy for some reason. Pearl Petro had owned 2-3 of the largest hay owls in the area, starting from Kamaloa and ending out in Kainalu. And the whole mountainside, Malka side, is just choked with archaeological sites. And in my work, I know that Native Hawaiians have got to connect with places, especially sacred places. I mean, that's all we have left is just a connection and the responsibility, because mostly there's all kind of like Kuleana people who still live in the East End. There's no development. It's an opportunity for not only all the fish ponds, and I think there's 13 fish ponds in that area, but also now the Malka sections of the sites. We just know that the family really would love to kind of see it placed in conservation and to be involved in some of the, especially the cleanup. Recently, I've been paying attention more so to Pi'ilani Hali and Lo'aloha, the first and the third largest heiau or archaeological site in our state. Pi'ilani Hali is in Hana and Lo'aloha is in Kaupo. I want to see how they did it or they need to do it so that the property, the site can be protected. We have a lot of archaeological kind of like grassroots guys because they hunt and so we know the sites and they're kind of like connected with the sites. So part of this is kind of like my experience with Trust for Public Lands. I've been on their board for 12 years and I've seen the wonderful preservation work that they've done also under the Aloha Aina banner. I'm really proud to kind of like have their involvement and the other with the Hawaii Island Land Trust. Having three land trusts kind of like the purchase and the management and the care and the stewardship for the community of this aupua is something that would really, really benefit the community in all different ways, including a terrific dairy site, agricultural site for a community, so-called agricultural adventure or farming kind of like opportunities. We've got two beautiful wells. You can see the water all the way down to the depth, just running. On the Makai side, you have the Kamehameha School's Mapulejo Garden, a mango patch. And you know, was hoping that we can make that connection also with the current managers of that area. A lot of Kuleana, like I say, but it's something that would really kind of like move you to kind of be able to walk on this heiau or just to view it. And to be able to say, wow, what a master of construction the way back when, like Hali. Hopefully, if you have any questions, we can get to that. But thank you very much for the opportunity to kind of speak to the issue.
Hello, Emmett, for taking the time to join us and offering that.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you. Any questions, board members? Okay, Ms. Hayashi, did you want to add anything? We're just available for questions.
Yeah, I submitted written testimony and I'm available for questions.
Anybody else speaking to Mapulejo on the Zoom here? Okay, I am not sure who else is on for other projects, but Dave, if you want to run through the rest of them and invite any people are here to speak to them to say so.
Sure, David Penn, Legacy Land Conservation Commission. I'm basically working off of the summary sheet of the commission rankings, which I believe was attached as an attachment to the submittal. And we're on the second page now at number 3, or the third ranked project, which is the Maka'alai Lands in Hana Maui, with Ke'au Hali'i, also known as Save the Hana Coast. And we just recently completed the first acquisition with Legacy Land Funds with this group from in fiscal year 2019 grant. So that's very encouraging. And we now know that we're able to reach a closing point with them.
Dave, when did that one close?
Oh, just within a couple of months ago.
Okay. I was actually looking for any news coverage on it. So you have any
Yeah, we don't have news coverage at this point. In fact, the whole announcement was, it was the wish of the community not to broadcast that until they took care of everything at home first.
Okay. All right. Well, if you could, you just send me a confirmation of the closing. I'd like to just review it.
Yeah. And so, you know, this is a very compelling regional scale landscape conservation effort that's going on along the Hana coast with the old Hana ranch lands. Unfortunately, there is not enough money in the current budget for us to fund this, but it also ranked very highly, and we hope that it can remain in a backup position. I don't know, Darlene, if I can see everybody who's in the waiting room, but I don't see anybody from the Maui folks on there that I recognize. Mr. Gomes, I don't know if they talked to you about this one.
No, I don't. No one's talked to me about it.
Okay.
Okay. Any questions on this one? All right, keep going.
Next one, number four, is Mauna Kea Fishing Village, also with the Alakahakai Trail Association. Mr. Fox briefly mentioned that during the earlier discussion. This is also a impressive regional scale landscape conservation effort. As Chris mentioned, starting from Honuapo and going all the way across the Kau coastline to the south, where it eventually links up with the Hawaiian homelands of Kamaoa Pueo at Kalae. And this is a little bit lower price than the other ones. Our ask is $875,000. I believe that this area is also leased for or licensed for pasture use, and another great project that the commission recommended for full funding if funding is available. If you wanted to say anything about this one. Okay, then going on to number five, the fifth line project is the Halulu Fish Pond Access. This is a application from Waipa Foundation on the north shore of Kauai. This is basically a 0.25 acre residential lot that's right on the highway across from Waipa headquarters. And it is fronting the fish pond and a large area, I believe owned by Kamehameha Schools, where Waipa Foundation holds many of its public events, and is just hoping to preserve this access pathway and remove the possibility of any magnificent home construction on the lot like there is on the two lots next door. So this is a pretty high price, but it's the north shore of Kauai. This application is coupled with a previously approved application from the same organization for Kalua Nono, which is an area a little bit in the riparian zone. Both of these would hopefully be co-funded by the County of Kauai with conservation easements held by County of Kauai. But currently it seems like the landowner wants to close on both properties at the same time. So this project was approved in fiscal year 2019. We were able to award $50,000 of grant funds that we have remaining available. And so this time Waipa is coming in for the additional $600,000 that makes up their full ask from the previous round. And I don't see, there's a second page. I don't see anybody.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Tommy Oi from Kauai. So what exactly would happen to the property?
If it's acquired by WIPA Foundation, I believe they would manage it as it is now, basically for an access point past the fish pond and down to the beach. And then they would also be able to better incorporate it into their events that are held there, the different festivals.
So they would be clearing the property?
No, I don't believe so. I was on the field visit to the foundation. I believe they would manage it.
I just was wondering, you know, you get the two houses next door to the property. Were they, did they have any concerns about purchasing this property?
We didn't receive any testimony from those two homeowners. I believe that they're, I didn't hear anything about any hoo-hoo between them and the WIPA Foundation, but.
Okay.
So yeah, that's no input on that, Tommy.
That's what's one of my concerns is, you know, the adjoining lot owners with their, they have their homes there, and if there was more people walking to that property, you know, if they had any concerns about that. Mm-hmm. But if they did not send in any testimony or anything, then it's all good.
Well, and I think there may be another opportunity for those concerns, if any, to be expressed when the situation with County of Kauai gets hammered out.
Uh-huh. And who is the actual owner of the property?
Let me see. I'd have to go back into the file to check on that.
This is Leah Hong. We're partners with Leah Hong from the Trust for Public Land. We're partners in the application with the WIPA Foundation. The current landowner is the Waioli Corporation.
Okay, I know. I heard about them. Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
You have a question about this. This always runs through my mind about acquisitions, because there's not enough money to acquire everything that people want to save. And there's also the land use system and zoning. And typically we don't get any real information about what potential development threats to a piece of property under the current zoning. I was curious about this one, whether it was in conservation and would require a conservation district use permit to build a house.
Leah, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is solidly in the urban district and you could build a nice big fancy house on it under the current zoning.
Yeah,
that is correct. There's very, very large mansions right next door that are in a similar zoning area.
I think the problem with that property is that 2/3 of the property is in VE flood zone. So most people wouldn't, it's not a property that people were breaking their legs to buy.
Yeah, and we do have the application questions do include things like verifying the county zoning and the flood zone situation and all of that. So the commission did have all of that information available.
Okay. Thank you.
If you don't mind, I see that Scott Crawford from Keao Hali'i has joined the meeting. And if we could just take a moment to back up to the Maka Alai lands, the number third rank project that we just went through.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, David, and mahalo, Chair Case. I guess I was in the waiting room. I signed in under my partner's name, so they didn't recognize me in the waiting room. So thank you for the opportunity to share a few words. I wanted to real quick just answer the chair's question about the closing on the Mokai property, which is what you see behind me here. That was March 31st was the official closing date for that. Working with Laura Kaakua at Hilt, we were communicating with the state PR office about sending out a press release, and they basically advised us to sort of wait a while until the pandemic is things are a little bit back to normal, that it would just get lost in the news. So we are just about to send out a local release within HANA to just let our own community know about it and post it on our website, Facebook page, and things like that. And that may get popped up in the, that may get picked up in the media, but that's why it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been in the media so far.
Okay, when did it close?
March 31st.
Okay, great.
And so the next phase, this Makalai request is a parcel that's just part of the same. It's basically three groupings of properties that are part of one contiguous coastline that we're seeking to protect. And I just wanted to give a little bit of an update on the matching fund status for that. We already had the $1.5 million in the County of Maui Open Space Fund in the current fiscal year budget. But they, the mayor, in the mayor's budget, he has proposed reallocating those funds to the FY21 budget so that they'll still be available if and when the state matching funds become available without having to go through a series of extensions or whatever. So I actually just testified to the Maui County Council Economic Development Committee this morning as they're going through their budget process, and we expect those funds to just basically be reallocated to the next fiscal year and be available when the state funds do become available, whether in this current budget that you're talking about or if it has to wait until the FY21 budget. And I'm happy to answer any other questions you may have, but just basically wanted to give you an update on the status of that.
So if there are no further questions, why don't you continue, David?
Thank you. The next up after Halulu Fish Pond was a tie, and this has been happening more frequently lately, tie between the Division of Forestry and Wildlife Conservation Easement at Haloa Aina Royal Hawaiian Sandalwood. So this would be a conservation easement over private property, and the Nawai Eha application, which was mentioned previously. Those are tied. The commission decided that they didn't want to spend the time going through a tiebreaker on this recommendation, and so would leave it up to the board if the board so chose to do so. So the Nawai Eha, I think everybody is familiar with. The Royal Hawaiian Sandalwood with Wade Lee up there on his ancestral land at the top of Kona. I finally had the chance to go up there, fantastic place, and give them credit. They are probably the folks who have applied to this program the most repeatedly without being successful on an award. But I think the commissioners are becoming more and more comfortable with this. It keeps moving up in the rankings. And also has received a $1 million capital improvement project grant from the legislature to the Division of Forestry and Wildlife from, I believe it is this year's FY20 money. So there's $1 million already appropriated by the state for this conservation piece. And then moving down to the eighth ranked application from our commission is Waikalua Loko Ia, This is a fish pond on the south side of Kaneohe Bay. Hawaiian Islands Land Trust is seeking to purchase a conservation easement from the current landowner, Pacific American Foundation. This is an ongoing restoration project with the Fish Pond Preservation Society and Pacific American Foundation there. It's served for many years as an important base for education about natural sciences and fish pond culture and other things. And the ask for that is for $700,000 out, which is roughly half of the proposed acquisition price for the conservation easement. And then the ninth ranked application was from the Division of Forestry and Wildlife for Ke'oni O'io Bay Coastal Protection. This is down by Makena Alanui Road and Ahi'i Kinau. I don't see the Maui DOFA folks on the list here who would be able to talk about it, unless Emma, you wanted to say something about that.
Sure. This is a project that is right next to Ahi'i Kanau and would really help with the management of the Ke'oni O'io parking lot, which is for La Perouse Bay, and allow managers to reconfigure the parking lot so it's more able to handle the large numbers of tourists, like sometimes over 1,000 a day that come there, and also better provide access around that area and reduce some of the problems that we're seeing, such as there's a lot of vehicle waste that are draining from the parking lot and that sort of thing. So this could be combined with a large project that better manages that whole parking area and protects the coral reef that's immediately adjacent to that parking area.
And then the last application on the list is from Malama Kauai for the Olohena Aina Center, 21.6 acres of agricultural land. A very interesting concept that would incorporate housing for farm workers and rehabilitation of the agricultural functions of the property. I don't know if this property has sold in the interim. I haven't heard anything back from Malama Kauai in a while, but the application, it's a first-time application. It may not have been fully developed, but there was some sense of urgency for acquiring this particular property to further the mission of Malama Kauai and the health of their constituents over there on Kauai. I don't see anybody from there on in the waiting room or on the lineup here. But I would just, Chair, before we move on, like to acknowledge our Legacy Land Commission members who are here at the meeting. John Sinton, who is the Vice Chair of the Commission and who presided over our review and recommendation meetings last September 2019, and also participated, I believe, in the Kau field visits, and Hi'ile Kavelo, who is our ex officio member from the Natural Area Reserves Commission and was the field visit leader for the Kaunamano field visit that the commission participated in last summer. So thank both of you folks for checking in, and with
thank you all for your
maybe they could
work.
Say something. Yeah.
You're welcome to add something if you want.
I can just say that we were very frustrated with the budget that we had and versus the quality of the applications. This is always the case, but this time was a really frustrating experience. But I'll also point out that the top two both received scores. The way we go through this process is that everybody votes and they rank each project from 1 to 5. Karamano received a perfect 1.0 score from this. That means every single commissioner, there were 7 of us participating in this meeting, Butch was recused, and one couldn't make the meeting, got a perfect 1.0, and the Mapulehu 1.14. This is almost a perfect score for both of these top two rated programs. So we really consider these exceptional opportunities.
Terrific. Thank you, Mr. Sinton. Ms. Cavello, did you want to add anything?
Sure. Aloha, Chair and other board members. Mahalo for spending a long day today, probably entertaining your agenda. So we appreciate your time. I just wanted to speak to just briefly the value of the Legacy Land Program. You know, there's never enough funding. We know that, we understand that, and we can continue to request to raise that ceiling so that we can potentially fund other very worthwhile applicants and protect you know, more land in Hawaii. But I just want to speak to this program is awesome, and the staff of the Legacy Land Program, you know, they give it their all, and they put in so much love, time, and energy into this, and it's just really awesome to see what this program is able to do, and all those parcels of land that were forever able to protect and preserve. And I think we're gonna continue to request to raise that ceiling because, the pressure is there, and all of our aina is so important to us, and it really does define us as Hawaii and us as a community, and that's what makes this place so special. So we're gonna continue to look to protect our aina wherever and however we can. And so mahalo for all of your folks, work that you do, and mahalo to those people that work so hard, like TPL folks, in preparing these applications. Mahalo.
Thank you very much. Okay, I think that's it on the presentations. Any further questions, board members? Okay, if not, somebody want to make a motion on C3?
I'd like to make a motion to approve with one amendment. And that amendment would be for Kauna Mano, and it's something that I talked about a little earlier, for public access, that in the if there is a contract awarded, that it contain a clause requiring that after a community engagement process, the owner implement reasonable Malcolm Mackay and lateral public access on a non-discriminatory basis, and that they also implement reasonable public access in the interim while this public engagement process is going on. With the rest of the staff recommendation being kept intact.
Thank you. Just clarification, did you say Malcolm Mackay and lateral access?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion, board members?
Yeah, I'd like to discuss. I'm sorry. I may have forgot to put the word non-discriminatory, that the public access should be on a non-discriminatory basis.
You have that in there, Chris.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay, Sam.
All right.
I'm a little bit concerned about your ask for public access while the community work is going on. I think it's really important that the community trust building take place, and that's not likely to be accelerated by having a kind of free-for-all access taking place during that process? That's my concern.
Well, I'm not talking about a free-for-all public access. The applicant talked about their intent is to have people be able to go through Kaunamano with keys, getting them from Kuahiwi Ranch, as they're doing currently with Waikapuna. And they're doing Waikapuna is also on an interim basis, in my understanding, because I don't think that they've gone through their public engagement process yet with Waikapuna. Am I correct on that, Mr. Fox or Leah Hong, Waikapuna, they're doing, you could call it an interim public access right now, right?
That's correct, Chris. It's just a temporary plan until we engage with the community.
Okay.
So, Keone, you would have, you'd be able to live with the condition that Chris just mentioned?
Yeah, it's my understanding, Chris, that this would still be managed access, but we're still allowing the public to use the property and maybe implement what we're doing now at Waikapuna. And then once we fulfill and complete our community engagement, we may refine that based on what the community wants.
Okay, right, and so that's why there, and the word, I'm happy with the word managed. I think that, I mean, there's some kind of management, even if it's relatively wide open. But I'm not trying to spell out what it's, how it should be handled right now, but I do want to assure that there will be public access and that the DLNR as a granting agency has the ability to step in if there's a problem in the future.
Chris, does your motion, did you say required? Is that the word that you use, required access?
Yes. That they have to, no, I didn't say the word required, but I said they have to implement, which is the same thing.
Okay, I'm just worried about in the instances that, valid instances where one public access should not be and cannot be allowed.
Right, so that's where the word managed comes in. So this does not preclude, like they can say certain areas are off limits. And you can't drive, you know, you can drive up to a certain point and you can't drive any farther, for example. They could have signs that say you can't walk into a certain area because it's an archaeological site. That's management. You can prohibit people who have violated your rules in the past from going in. Those are all parts of management.
Yeah, I get it, Chris, and I get the intent. It's just that I just feel it's somewhat a little premature, and we haven't given the community its time to try and flesh this out. And I just don't want to. I guess mission creep is a strong word, but I just don't want to put fingers into it until the community kind of speaks on it. That's just my opinion.
Well, I don't know of a way to, here we are approving a grant, and the next stage is that the state awards a contract, and the contract would be awarded before there is this, they'd be premature, before they would go into this community engagement process to talk about how the public access works. And I think that I'm open to changes in the language of it. I just don't know where we would be involved again, unless, and I really don't want to be in the process, to have the plan itself brought back to the board, for example, the public access plan. I think that may be a little too much oversight. So I'm, as I say, I'd be happy to any other wording that indicates the flexibility that I've just expressed in terms of there being the ability of the landowner to reasonably and responsibly manage this access. But you know, I do feel that at this point we need to make sure there's no reason to exclude everybody from these areas. And I am a little concerned because having been there, I get a lot of there's a lot of neighborhoods. I get a lot of neighborhood sentiment that, oh, we just want this for us. And I think we need to serve the public. You know, people in a particular neighborhood might say, well, okay, this is access just for us. And I want to make sure that we have public access right now, especially when we're funding something with public money.
Okay, anybody else? David Penn, are you wanting to make a suggestion or add something, or?
A possible idea, and I'm not sure exactly what the timeline on this acquisition would be. If we get an approval today and the governor releases the money and we complete the blanket encumbrance by June 30th, we still have another year after that to complete the contracting process. Not bringing the whole management plan back to the board, but perhaps, bringing back the grant agreement itself, to determine exactly what the appropriate language is. I'm not sure if that's feasible or not, and I don't know what Keone or Raina may have in mind at this point for a timeline for closing this acquisition.
We're currently working to get the property under contract, and you know, if all of the, I mean, all of the funding has been approved by the commission, and we're hoping that we close by the end of the year. If not, we'd hope to extend an option, you know, maybe a year, maybe next June. So it's hard to predict these things, but that's the timeline we're looking at.
I have a clarifying question. Is this public access requirement just for the Condo Manil project, or is it applying to everything in C3?
Well, right now, and I don't know what we've done, and I can't say what the conditions were on prior acquisitions. It doesn't apply to anything that's happened before. It applies to, and the short answer is it just applies to Kona Mano because that's the only thing we have in front of us. And I would rather put a clause in the contract than have a public access plan brought back to the board, because I think that then every time, there may be changes over time of how the landowner wants to manage the public access. And I think that we have reasonable people in the state who will see the issues and the need with an overall mandate for public access and the need for some flexibility on this. And so even if they had a set plan in a year's time, if we make a requirement that it be brought back to the board, then I would suppose that any changes would have to be brought back to the board too. And I don't want to get the board's fingers in it to that extent. I just want to make sure that there is the ability for people to enjoy this area, the public to get down and enjoy this area, as well as the protection aspects that we've heard a lot about.
Kaivi.
Yeah, well, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't that a built-in condition as a part of the legacy land funds?
It's one of the criteria for coming up with the commission recommendation. The purpose clause of the statute has an implication for public access, but you know, I was anticipating this question, and I'm not entirely prepared for it. But the I don't know where there's an actual requirement in the statute or the administrative rules about providing public access or what kind of public access to be provided. But it certainly is, a factor that the commission, that's in the application and that the commission looks at in putting together its recommendations, and something that we do have the ability to enforce, in our monitoring program.
Hey, I'm not sure. Am I out of time?
I was just going to say your proposed amendment requires managed public access and including interim managed public access. And what I think we're trying to balance here, and the community will be trying to balance, is how to protect the historical cultural aspects of the trail and the site while allowing other kinds of access, recreational and the like. And so I think the managed access in the interim is probably a good enough way to do it. It's not going to be full blown, free for all, and you're going to have to go through a gate, and if it seems like somebody is abusing that privilege, you can manage it in a tighter way, I think. So I'd be comfortable with that language as suggested. Sam.
Jimmy had his hand up first.
Who did? Jimmy. Okay, Jimmy. Jimmy and then Sam.
So, in the community and some of the testifiers we had that has written in as far as for this 3A, they felt that they need to be able to go for their gathering rights and for not, for them to sustain for their refrigerator, for them to hunt and fish, and also to go and see their kupuna ibi. So I just want to make sure that they would be able to have access to that in a managed profile, We had about, 9 people opposing, so some of their opposing, but one of them wrote that they wanted to be able to. That's their area, that's their moku, and they've been raised there, and they want to be able to go and fish and gather and so forth and talk to the Ivi Kupuna. So as long as they can have access to that also.
Can I add something here, please? I'm okay with all of those things that Jimmy talked about. All that access is protected under our constitution. We also have the trail, and that is owned by the state. That was protected by our Queen Liliuokalani. The public has access over that trail. But I don't have any concerns with the open pedestrian access. It's more the vehicular access. How do we manage that? And that's where we wanted to really get into the details with the community. Making sure the gates are closed. We do incur liability as being the fee simple owner. The property insurance prices are high. For Waikapuna, it's $6,700 a year just in property insurance. So those are the concerns we have, especially with the vehicular access. But I think Chris's language gives us enough flexibility to work with that. Our thought was to just kind of continue what the ranch and owner have been doing now anyway, until we're really able to flesh out those details with the community. And that would be within the next 12 to 18 months. So not too long, really.
Sam?
Okay, then
I'm glad that you said that, and I guess it eases my concern. So those concerns remain.
David, did you want to add one more?
Just for the record, just for the record, I can see us making an award of a grant where we wouldn't have public access. You know, or you might just have like a really short type, but in this case, we're talking about miles of coastline. So.
David.
Yeah, program is in agreement with Chris's suggestion. I've just consulted with our Deputy Attorney General on it. However, I'd just also like to clarify, it's my understanding that although there's no question that the Ala Loa is a Highways Act trail, I don't believe that the state has yet perfected its claim to that, and that it has not been, at least these portions in Kau'u have not been incorporated into the network.
Okay. All right, any other questions here? If not, let's see. Chris made a motion, and did we get a second on it?
Second.
Yeah, okay.
Chair, there's someone holding up their hand.
Yeah, I think we're going to, I think the board members are done. So I think we'll go ahead and take a vote on this. So if not, all in favor of the motion to approve T3 as amended, say aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Okay. Or any with reservations? Okay, that's unanimous. So we're good to go here. Thank you all very, very much. And thank you everyone who joined in. And thank you for all of your really hard work on this wonderful
thank
program.
You.
Big supporters. We really appreciate everything that you do. With that, we have one agenda item remaining. Let's take a 5-minute break and then we'll come back for that last agenda item, which is a aquatic resources agenda item. And if you want to mute your screen and your video during the break, feel free.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I wasn't counting me. Okay, are we ready to continue? All right, so our last agenda item is a briefing by the Division of Aquatic Resources, and I'm in the F column, F1. And so we're going to have Brian Nielsen, our Division of Aquatic Resources Administrator, kick it off, except he might, oh yeah, there he is. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian, hold
hey
on.
Hi there, thank hold you. On,
all right, hang on a second. Darlene, are you ready? Yeah. Darlene, are you okay? Are you set?
Yes. I'm gonna make Brian the co-host because I'm gonna share his screen, his presentation.
Okay.
Can you see it?
Yes.
Okay. Oops. Okay, let's see how I, okay. All right, well, thank you, Chair and board members. Everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, as Suzanne already introduced me, Brian Nielsen, I'm the Administrator of Division of Aquatic Resources. Also on the Zoom call, we have our DAR 30 by 30 coordinator, Carrie Lindon.
Oh, I made him the host, I can't return.
Oh, what's that, Darlene?
Oh, no, I'm okay.
Okay, so we also have Carrie Littlejohn, our DAR 30 by 30 coordinator, on the Zoom call. And then I've also invited two of our partners to join on the Zoom as well. Jocelyn Herbert from Resource Legacy Fund, as well as Dana O'Connell from Hawaii Community Foundation, who are both partnering with us on this initiative and can also field any questions about the public-private partnership initiative that we'll be talking about as part of this presentation and briefing. But basically, the goal of this briefing today is to introduce this initiative and a lot of these action items, whether they're fishing rules or designations of managed areas, these are going to be coming through the board in the coming months and coming years. And they're kind of delivered to you on a piecemeal fashion. So we wanted to give you a broader overview in how these different rules and designations fit into this larger statewide plan and initiative. So, let's see, how do I advance the slide? Do I need to share?
Darlene, is the slide on your computer or is it on Brian's computer?
It's on mine.
Yeah, so why don't you just go ahead and advance this slide?
Okay.
Okay. Slide. Hold on, I gotta go back to get, I have to get my hosting back. Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Let's see.
Just hit the down arrow up at the top, yep, the down right arrow.
There. Okay. So a little bit background on the 30 by 30 initiative. So this this came out of the Sustainable Hawaii Initiative. This is the initiative that Governor David Ige announced at the 2016 World Conservation Congress, where he rolled out a whole series of targets and goals to bring Hawaii towards a more sustainable future. So these initiatives focused on increasing local food production, invasive species through the biosecurity plan, watershed protection, which is led by DOFA, renewable energy, and then the 30 by 30 marine management plan, which is led by DAR. And this initiative was the culmination of a couple of different other initiatives, the Aloha Plus Challenge and the Malama Honua Promise to Pa'aina, with the return of Hokulea from its worldwide voyage, and then all came together at this World Conservation Congress. You could advance to the next slide. So the 30 by 30 initiative's goal is to effectively manage Hawaii's nearshore marine waters with at least 30% established as marine managed areas by the year 2030. So just to give you an idea where we're at now, statewide we have 6% of our nearshore waters are designated as marine managed areas. So the goal is to take that 6% and move it to 30%. Just to clarify what we mean by nearshore waters, so we've defined nearshore waters as all the waters out to 150 foot depth. So we're not talking about bottom fish areas or offshore trolling, troll fishing areas. This is really the nearshore reef that we've encompassed in this plan. And then also just to explain a little bit more what we mean by MMAs or marine managed areas. So Hawaii has a whole suite of marine managed areas, from marine life conservation districts, fishery management areas, fishery replenish areas, community-based subsistence fishing areas. I'm sure some of these board members have passed some of those designations, but we're putting those all under this umbrella we're calling marine managed areas. And another thing to notice, a marine managed area doesn't mean no fishing. There's a whole wide range of management approaches that can be applied to a marine managed area, but it isn't a designated area with special rules and regulations applied to that. But it could be protections of herbivore reef fishes like Kahikili fishery management area, or it could be a marine life conservation district like Hanama Bay that has, no fishing or boating involved. So a pretty wide range of management approaches that can go under this umbrella of marine managed area. And then we've also taken the liberty of adding our own name to this 30 by 30 initiative called Holomua, which is translated to go forward or to progress. And so we're still sticking with this 30 by 30 initiative name that the governor gave it, but we kind of wanted to add our own name because we've talked to hundreds of community members and fishers about the 30 by 30 initiative. And the first thing they ask is, well, why only 30%? Or what about the other 70%? And we end up getting in this really unproductive conversation about 30%, when really the intent of the goal is to increase sustainability in Hawaii. And, the 30 number, it is, science-based. There is some research showing that you need at least 30% of your waters to be effectively managed to achieve sustainability and effective management. But it's also just, an achievable target to go from 6% to 30%. So we kind of wanted to give our own name so we're just not caught up in this 30% designation so much. We're also looking at Holomua. We're looking at this from within DAR as well. A lot of management issues have changed over the last several years with the onset of climate change. We have a fairly new leadership team. I've only been in my position for just over a year. A lot of new staff. So we're really looking at this opportunity as a strategic plan for DAR moving forward and how to address these new threats and just kind of refocus. But a lot of what DAR does, it isn't just marine managed areas. It's a whole suite of things, which I'll be talking about today. So that's a little bit
more about this this name Holomua. Okay, next slide, please. So the vision of this initiative is to ensure healthy ecosystems and abundant resources that allow the people of Hawaii to enjoy coastal waters, support local livelihoods, and feed our families. And this initiative's success depends greatly on the significant involvement of stakeholders. DAR will work with communities across the state to achieve this vision. And then you could advance to the next slide. So a little bit more about Holomua. To go forward, to progress, what exactly does that mean in terms of sustainability in Hawaii? So, you know, what's the problem we're trying to fix? So what's, you know, become very apparent in the last 5 years is the onset of climate change. We've had three major coral bleaching events in Hawaii. This is unprecedented. Yes, there's been documentation of coral bleaching in Hawaii in the past, but not nearly at the scale or frequency that we're seeing today, and scientists are predicting that this is the new norm, that that more bleaching events are going to be in the future and more frequent. And so what we're really worried about is that we're losing coral at a faster rate than what we're gaining through growth and recruitment and colonization. And so we really need to adapt our management plans to this new approach and really think about how we're gonna face this new challenge and threat. And while we're doing that, we also have to try to manage some of these threats that we've been dealing with for decades here, with runoff, land-based source pollution, pollutants, nutrients that we still, really need to get a handle on. And then also, unsustainable fishing practices, whether it's illegal fishing activities or regulations that need to be updated. That's what we're talking about in terms of progressing sustainability here in Hawaii. And you can advance to the next slide. So in order to achieve these goals, we really got to look at all the tools in our toolbox. For management. So we've developed four main pillars as part of this plan.
Sorry, I think we have two people that are, Darlene and Tommy, would you mind putting your microphone on mute during the presentation?
Okay, so we've defined five main pillars of this initiative. The first pillar is place-based manning. Place-based planning, and that's really where that 30 by 30 elements come in, and moving our marine managed areas from 6% to 30% statewide. The second major initiative is monitoring. We greatly rely on monitoring to indicate what the health of our marine resources are. Assess how our management actions are performing, learn from successes, learn from mistakes. And this, heavily relies on traditional fish counts and coral mapping, that type of thing. But what we're becoming increasingly aware of is we need to expand monitoring to social monitoring, economic monitoring, enforcement monitoring, to get a full picture of our management approach. So this monitoring component is very important. The third major pillar is the promotion of pono fishing practices. So this focuses on our education and outreach programs, promoting sustainable fishing practices. This is also where rules and regulations come in, and then also our partners at DoCare enforcement, and all of these will hopefully lead to much more compliance. We're never going to have enough officers to write tickets to everyone in the state. We're relying on behavior change through this initiative. So hopefully the enforcement can just focus on those few bad apples. And then the fourth major pillar is protection and restoration. So the protection aspect is dealing with invasive species, controlling invasive species that degrade our nearshore reefs like invasive seaweed, but also preventing new introductions through ship ballast water, whole fouling, aquaculture imports, aquarium trade, and then also restoration. There's a whole new wave of coral reef restoration that's hitting a lot of excitement around this right now. DAR does have a coral nursery. We actually will be presenting at the next board meeting where we plan to outplant some coral colonies to the reef. But this is another major component of achieving our sustainability goals. You can advance to the next slide. So some of the guiding principles of this initiative is to have a transparent public planning process that's also participatory. So we don't wanna meet stakeholders for the first time at the land board meeting. We don't wanna hear about issues and their ideas at the land board meeting. We wanna get them involved from the beginning and have all that dialogue early on and often. That's a major goal for us with this initiative. Our guiding principle is also place-based. And so our philosophy is each island is unique, each moku is unique, each ahupua'a is unique. And so we need to take that into consideration with marine managed areas, but also consulting with stakeholders as well. That's not to say that we might not be bringing statewide rule packages to the land board. We don't want to have to bring 100, you know, uhu bag limit rule packages to the land board. So there is some commonalities between places that we are looking at statewide rules, but our philosophy is really place-based. We also rely on science and culture to inform the plan. It's adaptive and a heavy reliance on partnerships. There's no way we can achieve our goals alone. So we're relying on Hawaiian communities, fishing groups, ocean users, tourism, NGOs, other government agencies, state and federal, as well as public-private partnerships. And you could advance to the next slide. So just to kind of run through some of the our timeline here and some of the actions that we're hoping to accomplish. So starting by December 2020, getting back to the importance of partnerships, DAR and DLNR have entered into a partnership with the Hawaii Community Foundation and Resource Legacy Fund to provide philanthropic support. So the funding needs for nearshore management far exceed DAR and DLNR's budget, especially now where we're in the early stages of a major economic crisis here in Hawaii. So there's strong interest for public-private partnerships to support marine conservation efforts in Hawaii. And so this memorandum of understanding makes the role of philanthropy transparent. And this MOU is currently available on our website. I've also, as I mentioned, I've got Dana Okano and Jocelyn Herbert on the line that are the key partners in this MOU, if there's any questions. As part of that MOU, we're also developing a pooled fund for philanthropic support. There would be an advisory group overseeing this pooled fund, representing various stakeholders that oversee and guide the use of the fund. And these funds would not only be available for DAR, as we mentioned, the importance of partnerships. It would fund other partners as well that have the similar goals and in terms of sustainability outlined in the MOU. So we also plan to release a public document describing the full initiative and then have plans to convene open houses on each island to share information and seek input. Those open houses were planned for this summer, but with the COVID situation, those might have to be bumped forward a little bit. But the idea of these meetings are not to really propose a specific rule package, but to give an overview of the initiative, to listen to issues in particular areas, to hear ideas, and then hopefully move into more working group level discussions to develop proposals for new marine managed areas. Okay, next slide. So moving ahead, by December 2021, we'll create a scientific advisory committee and interdisciplinary stakeholder groups. We'll complete management plans for existing marine managed areas. So that 6% I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, most of those don't have management plans. So we'd like to do that. Draft a simplified classification system for Hawaii's marine managed areas, and then convene follow-up series of outreach meetings on each island. Next slide. And then by 2024, work with communities and scientists to identify additional areas for improved marine management. So there might be some areas that have really specific ecological importance and benefits that might be remote. Maybe there's not a community that's really driving that process. And so DAR might take the initiative to propose these marine managed areas, but of course, bringing communities and stakeholders along the way with those initiatives as well. And then we'd also like to establish a statewide monitoring plan and then seek independent evaluation of progress on the initiative. And then next slide. Then before I wrap up here, I just want to put on your radar a few actions that fall under this initiative that may be heading to the board in the coming months or coming year. So the Mo'omaumi community-based subsistence fishing area, the board has already approved for this proposal to go to public hearing. Those were scheduled for last month, but we had to postpone those hearings due to the COVID crisis. But we plan, as soon as it's safe to convene and in public again, to reschedule those public hearings and move forward with that proposal. And then we're also working with some fishers in Mauna Loa Bay to create a fishery management area in Mauna Loa. And then Mililii and Kipahulu have both sent letters of interest to DLNR to create community-based subsistence fishing areas in their areas, but just still in the early state scoping phases of those plans. And then DAR is also in the early stages of planning statewide herbivore fisheries rules. So given the ecological importance of select herbivores, and especially the need with the bleaching events we've been getting hit with, we're looking at adding additional protection for herbivores throughout the state. And next slide. So that's it. I'm happy to take any questions or some of my colleagues on the Zoom call as well. So appreciate your time. Thank you.
Mahalo, Brian, for that overview of the progress so far on this. I'm really hopeful for it, and it would be awesome to be able to review this PowerPoint or whatever it is. It's a PDF, isn't it? If I would love to see that PDF, and so I could review it more slowly in my leisure.
Okay, I have shared it with Darlene, so she can hopefully send that out to all the board members.
That would be awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Brian, by 2024, your near shore is going to be very near.
Yes. Good how point.
How is this initiative funded?
So we've kind of reprogrammed a lot of existing DAR positions. So just kind of taken existing positions and put focus here. We have also been able to get some legislative funding to support like our two planner positions that are coordinating this. That's based on legislative funding. We've cobbled together NOAA grants, NIFWIF grants, and Castle Foundation has also contributed to this effort as well.
I have a question. I think it would be useful to have a briefing to the board on progress, results on some of the existing protected areas, like Kaupulehu and Haena at some point.
Okay, I'm just noting that. I believe Haena is just about at their five-year review period, so that could be very timely for Haena. And then Kaupulehu, we can put that together as well. But just anecdotally swimming around Kaupulehu, I couldn't believe how many fish were there. I don't know if the data reflects that, but I definitely saw a lot more fish when I snorkeled around there a couple months ago. So I'll note that. Thank you.
We've been able to document that the recovery of quite a few of the fish in Kaupulehu is really a remarkable thing. So TNC divers have been out there working with the Kaupulehu community.
Any other questions?
Mahalo again.
Okay, mahalo. Thank you all for your time.
Suzanne.
Yeah, so I guess somebody needs to close
the meeting. Suzanne.
Shall we just log off?
Did I text her?
You gotta make a put them in chat or something. I guess. I don't know. She all right or what?
Jimmy, I think you can
We'll call for adjournment.
Yes.
If there's nothing else to discuss and we're done with our agenda, is there a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Is there a second? It's been moved and second. Meeting adjourned.
Goodbye, everybody. Have a safe weekend.
Yeah, same to you, Chris, and everyone else. Aloha.
You guys.
Bye, guys. I am. Try. I can stop recording, though. Should I stop recording?
Yeah.
Hold on, let me just
stop the YouTube.
Yeah. Oops, let me get out.